Good day, everyone, and welcome back to the John White Project. I am your host, John White, and today is an extra special interview for me. I am interviewing my cousin, Ashley Martin, who is a endometriosis warrior. Now, being a man, I am very unfamiliar with, I'm going to call it quote-unquote, women's stuff. Yes, that is a technical term. I'm sure it's in a medical dictionary somewhere that some man has written. Medical stuff, all on the chapter on women. So I would like to introduce Ashley Martin to the show. Hi, Ashley. How are you?
Hi, John. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be talking to you today.
You know what? I am so excited to have you here. I still remember holding you as a baby, and then we kind of lost touch there, and then now you're all grown up. I'm feeling kind of old here, but the stuff that you have gone through in your life, it's in the past 24 hours, I've learned so much more about you. It's incredible. I thought that this would be a good time to do this interview because for the first time ever in Ontario, Ontario is actually recognizing Endometriosis Month. So this is the first one ever. Am I correct on that?
Yep, you're absolutely right. It's a very exciting time to be an endometriosis warrior in Ontario, for sure.
That's excellent. You know, you have days for everything, but I mean, this is something that, you know, is extra special to you. And you know, just as we're family, it's extra special to me as well.
100%. Yeah, it's very, very special. And just to have that awareness out there for this to be recognized by our province that we live in, it's just such an important time, especially for during the month of March.
Excellent. Yeah. Now, as a man, like I said in the beginning there, I'm very unfamiliar with a lot of women's issues, and I'm sure they're, you know, most men are the same, unless, you know, their wife or significant other has this issue. But let me ask you, what exactly is endometriosis?
That's a great question. So endometriosis is when the tissue that is similar to the tissue that lines the uterus, which is called the endometrium, grows outside of the uterus on any organ within the human body. So one misconception that I'd just like to address right away is that oftentimes endometriosis is mistaken to be the endometrial lining that lines the uterus. And that is just simply not true. And it, like I said, it can be found anywhere in the human body. It's been found on the brain, in the lungs, and various other organs within every organ in the human body, like I said.
So yeah, it's just not affixed to one specific place. Wow.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now you also have, and please forgive me if I get this wrong, adenomyosis?
Correct. Yeah. So it's pronounced many different ways.
Okay.
But, you're definitely not the only one to call it adenomyosis. It can be called that or adenomyosis.
Okay.
And it's when the endometrium grows into the muscle wall of the uterus. So instead of doing the regular process or of thickening and breaking down within the uterus, this endometrial tissue is growing into the middle layer, which is called the myometrium. And it's the muscle wall of the uterus. And it can cause the uterus to become enlarged, very painful. And it can bleed at any point in time and during the month and cause an extreme amount of pain.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's basically separating everything, like that would be in the muscles and just pushing everything out.
Yeah. Yeah. And it can just make your uterus so big and enlarged in some cases that it just causes an exorbitant amount of pain.
Oh, wow. All right. Now, this was actually the last question that I sent you, but I thought I would ask this first because to me, being diagnosed with the prostate cancer and then going through all that and then learning that, you know, more cancer is, or the prostate cancer is more towards a Black or an Asian people group. Now, is there a specific people group that endometriosis is more aligned with?
So, no. And actually, historically, endometriosis was wrongfully thought of to be a white woman, working woman's disease.
Oh.
And some of the harm that this has caused is that this has caused so many people of every different ethnicity, race, background to go undiagnosed. And unfortunately, this is just the residual effect has been extreme for the community of people who suffer from endometriosis.
Wow. Now I understand with some of the research that I've done, it's difficult enough to actually get an endometriosis diagnosis. So if doctors are going in thinking that basically this is a white woman's problem, it would even be harder for like Asians or Blacks or Hispanics to even come up with that diagnosis.
Absolutely. It's much more difficult for people who are non-white to receive a diagnosis, and even more so for people who are from the LGBTQ community, like especially transgender individuals as well.
Right.
So there's just so many different biases that exist that cause major roadblocks for diagnosis and treatment.
Now, I'm just gonna let the audience know, because I take it for granted that you are of mixed race. So, and very beautiful, by the way. I'm throwing that in. It's a complete bias on my part, but did that hinder you from getting a diagnosis, or was it just the doctors just don't know?
I do believe that it did hinder, it caused a delay in diagnosis. And the reason why I think that is, I think that a few biases, either conscious or unconscious, existed. Mm-hmm. So my initial family doctor was a family doctor who I had from the time I was born in Southwestern Ontario. And it was a male doctor to start off, a white male doctor. And from the time that I had my first painful period, I was dismissed right off the bat and was told that, you know, this is something you need to expect. You're a woman. And this is a normal thing, quote unquote, normal. And right from there, I was dismissed. But once I got older, I did notice that I lived and had the same family doctor for, I think it was until I was for about 13 years, I believe it was, from the time that I started feeling symptoms until I left Southwestern Ontario and moved to Toronto.
Right.
So that being said, I just had a completely different experience once I relocated to Toronto and I assigned myself. I seeked out a new family doctor because I just wasn't getting the help that I wanted from my family doctor. And to give an example of that, I requested on multiple occasions to see a specialist or a gynecologist. And the entire time that I was a patient of my initial family doctor, he refused to send me to see a gynecologist, which is a doctor who specializes in women's health.
Yeah, you think if you were going through issues that they'd wanna resolve that issue. Now your new doctor, is it a female doctor?
Actually, no. So my current doctor, so I've been through a few family doctors since I even moved to Toronto.
Okay.
My current family doctor is amazing. I really, really like them. It's a male doctor.
Excellent.
From the LGBTQ community as well. And he's very, very resourceful and he listens, which is a great attribute to have. And he's not an endometriosis specialist and doesn't even know that much about endometriosis. But why I say he's such a great doctor is that he listens to my symptoms and he's not afraid to send me to referrals. And he's not afraid to request that I go back to see certain specialists, which is a great, yeah, and it's a great quality to have, because some doctors, I think that ego gets in the way, and yes, they just want to, my experience has been that, you know, some doctors just want to know everything, and it's just not feasible because mm-hmm. everyone's human, right?
Exactly. So, yeah.
Exactly.
And maybe coming from the LGBTQ community, the doctor's got to think outside the box, you know, that the fact yeah. that he listens more, you know, maybe that's a trait that in the community you've got to listen to, because it's just a I'm going to say it, quote unquote, different world. So you've got to react to what you're seeing.
Correct. I definitely think that I feel comfortable in that my doctor is willing to share with me, like, you know, personal experiences in a very professional manner mm-hmm. and to make me feel comfortable in my visits, for sure.
That's excellent. And that is how a doctor should treat you, like a person, almost like a friend that you've spoken to, you know, pretty much all your life, because you're telling them this intimate, you know, things.
Absolutely. 100%.
Now, I talked about having my cancer diagnosis. I was going through your Instagram feed the other day, and you had mentioned Lupron. And if you know, you know. And I kind of chuckled at that and went, oh, look, we were on the same drugs. Fortunately, it worked for me, but unfortunately, it didn't work for you. How do I word this? Is it roll the dice? In the situation where the medical institution is not sure of what is actually going to work with the drugs that they prescribe?
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow. So, I mean, I'm just imagining at some point, and I don't mean to make light of this. Sometimes you just gotta, you know, go with what you feel. And I mean, if you had all those pills or whatever, you must have felt like a human piggy bank or something that rattled when you were shaken or something.
Absolutely. Because I did. I used to describe myself as feeling like a human guinea pig. That's how I describe myself, because
wow.
it just felt like there's no answers and everything's a trial, and it continues to be that way. And so you're right on the dot with that one.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, now, and I'm going back to this, and I don't mean to make this a race issue, but I mean, it seems it's, again, it's hard enough to get a diagnosis if you were white. It's even harder if you were a non-white, Asian, Black, or Hispanic, or something like that. I mean, is there nothing written down, or is there not enough information out there, like this is your starting point, here's step one, or is it a lot of like experimentation?
I would say it's probably a mix of both. There's a lot of experimentation that's going on. There's also a lot of lack of representation, meaning that because people's symptoms are just not even getting recognized recognized right off the bat. So if someone came forward and described their symptoms to a doctor and they said, okay, I think after ruling out every other condition that is out there, and then going through the battery of tests, if they're encouraged to continue on in the process instead of dismissing their symptoms, I think that there would be a better idea of how people are affected. And the other part about that too is the unconscious bias that exists within the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. Just to give an idea, a little bit of a historical background on that is that back in the day, it was assumed that Black women had a higher pain tolerance than white women did.
Right.
And Black women were experimented on, like by doing surgeries without anesthetic versus their white counterparts having surgery and having anesthetic. And so these biases that exist within the medical field that have just been passed on for decades, it's just had a severe impact on any person of color, especially Black and Indigenous people here in Canada, because, you know, there's I've literally been told by the first family doctor that I had, like, oh, well, you should have a pretty high pain tolerance. And I never understood the significance of that comment.
Oh, my goodness.
Until just recently when I learned that little bit of history.
Wow.
So yeah, there's definitely, it's a lack of representation for sure.
I'd like to say we've come a long way, but apparently you've proved me wrong on that. Wow.
Right. Yeah. There's a long way to go still.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Okay. I'm just going to, ignore my feelings on that and just go to the next question. in your Instagram feed, and I'm going to put all your social media platforms in the description so other people can follow along with you. You had discussed that you had a pap smear. Something just didn't seem right. You had an abnormal result come back. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah. So how that came about was I always get my pap smears done on a regular basis, as soon as I'm required to. However, this time around, I wasn't quite due for a pap smear. And I was being, I'll call it, medically investigated to try and figure out why I was having this particular set of symptoms. Right. And part of it was having bleeding, and it just wasn't stopping, bleeding and spotting that was not stopping. Mm. And I was also having pain and other symptoms as well. So my specialist, Mount Sinai Hospital in Toronto, she did a pap smear and took a swab, and then she called me with the results and advised that there was an abnormal finding on the pap smear. So from there, I was scheduled a colposcopy with the Women's College Hospital, and okay. They specialize in women's health. So I went in for that appointment, and I wasn't too sure what to expect. So I actually did a YouTube video on this because of my experience, and I hadn't found too many other videos of what to expect for this type of procedure.
Right.
And so anyway, I went in for my appointment, had a really great set of medical professionals that were there to help me through the appointment from start to finish. And I had a biopsy done of the abnormal cells that were on my cervix. By the way, the biopsy hurt a lot. I was in a lot of pain from that. Oh. And then following that, within a few weeks, I was advised that they were high grade precancerous cells on my cervix. So wow. That they would need to be removed immediately. So a couple months later, I think it was 3 months later, partially my fault. I was very anxious about the procedure, so I actually pushed it back as far as I could.
I understand.
Yeah. And then, so I had the LEAP procedure done.
Now I read that, but what exactly is that?
Yeah. So the LEAP procedure, if I have this correct, it's the loop electrosurgical procedure. So they essentially go in and laser off the cells. They laser and excise them, and just try to completely remove them from the root so that they don't grow back.
Now, what was the recovery time for something like that?
So the recovery time is not too long. So I took a couple of days off because I know that my body takes quite a bit of time to recover from procedures.
Right.
And so I took a few days off myself, but for the whole area to heal, it's over a month.
Oh.
So you have to keep it very, very clean. And there just can't be anything internal, essentially, like, you know, a lot of women use tampons and things like that.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of keeping things clean and keeping the area clean. And then I had a very easy, straightforward recovery. There was pain. Mm-hmm. There was quite a bit of pain, and it's a weird pain because it's internal.
Right.
And it feels like, my experience was that it feels like it was a little like stinging or kind of a burning sensation that you can't really heal. You can't put an ointment on it, right? Because it's not internal. So But yeah, it was an okay experience. It was not that bad.
Wow. Now, that, I guess, is apparently better than some of the other things that you've gone through. Reading on your Instagram feed, there was, you're actually, I don't know whether it said that you were diagnosed, but you've got PTSD from a medical procedure that they said, yeah, it's no big deal, but apparently it was.
Yeah. I didn't realize for a long time that I've never been like formally written down on paper that I have PTSD, but I have to my family doctor about it. And he said, yeah, it makes sense that you would have post-traumatic stress from that type of medical experience. So essentially what happened was years ago, about a year after I had my endometriosis diagnosis surgery procedure, I was recommended to have an IUD, which is an intrauterine device, put in to help with the regulation of hormones.
Right.
Or so I was told. And they told me that I probably wouldn't feel any pain at all. It would be a very quick insertion and then I would be on my way. And so this information wasn't helpful because I wasn't told that it could be extremely painful.
Oh.
And unfortunately, my experience was that it was extremely painful. And a few days later, I ended up in the emergency room from the pain. I had pain for 2 months following that procedure.
Oh,
and
wow.
once I went to the emergency room, they actually sent my endometriosis specialist, a resident from his office, came down to speak to me, thankfully, because it was the same hospital. They just happened to be there.
Right.
And I was thankful for that they were available to speak to me. But I was encouraged to keep the IUD in and let my body try to adjust to having this foreign object inside.
Okay.
And yeah, that adjustment period for me was 2 months. I was in pain for a good 2 months, and I had to take quite a bit of time off work, unfortunately. But fortunately, my workplace was very understanding of that. So,
excellent. That's good. Now, I was going to ask you about that. How has this affected, one, your work habits, and your personal life, like dating? Or you don't have to answer that last one, but the work life. Yeah. I'm glad that your place of work at least knows what's going on.
So in terms of how it affects me personally in my work life, I've been lucky to have employers that have been very understanding and have allowed me to be flexible in my work schedule in terms of being able to take appointments, or if I have a flare-up that lasts a day or lasts a week, that I've been able to work with my employers to work around that. But unfortunately, that's not everyone's experience, and a lot of people lose employment over this type of situation.
Yeah, lost days and things like that.
Yeah. And then on the other side of it, like my personal and like social life has been affected in that, you know, there's been times in my life when the pain hasn't been as managed as it currently is.
Right.
And it would cause me to not be able to make plans in advance or have to cancel plans last minute. And then another important part of that is like with dating. I think it's important to talk about this because a lot of times people don't feel comfortable talking about it or asking those questions. But in terms of having a partner or an intimate partner, there's a lot of conversations that have to be had and understanding of, you know, there may be days or weeks where I'm not myself and I'm in a lot of pain and I can't go out on a date or have an intimate connection with someone. So it's definitely had impact, you know, if you're lucky enough to meet someone for a personal love life that understands this, it's a great experience to
That's excellent.
Someone to understand.
And you have, and I'm happy about that as well.
Yeah.
Now, You're on social media. You're on Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter. And like I say, I'll put these in the description down below. But when and most importantly, why did you decide to go, you know, quote unquote, public on social media about your diagnosis?
I decided to go public about it after much consideration and thought and going back and forth, because during the pandemic, specifically when it got to the beginning of March 2021, I started to feel very alone. And as many people experience, especially people with health issues, that it was very difficult to be able to connect with a doctor around those times, and appointments were being missed, and you know, appointments weren't available. For me particularly, I had a medication that I was on that was not available all of a sudden. Oh. Because of the borders being shut down, the medication I was on was being shipped in from the States, and it was on back order.
Oh.
And it turns out it just never actually became available again in Canada.
Oh.
And yeah, and so I felt very stressed and alone, and I thought, okay, maybe I should, you know, look at some videos on YouTube. And then I didn't really see too much that appealed to me and that answered my questions. So I decided, okay, why don't I start documenting my journey? And right. Then I started my Instagram page as well. And I'm so glad that I did, because there's such a massive endometriosis community and a chronic pain community that exists that I never knew existed before. And it really, really helped with my own personal mental health. And just to have quick resources for other people who are going through the same thing and like getting their experience. So that's why I decided to start it, was so that I didn't feel so alone, and to get information out there about myself and to receive information as well.
Yeah, I like the fact that you had mentioned that there was get-togethers virtually to yes. discuss and educational forums to discuss pain remedies and things like that. I thought that's fantastic that the group itself, the endometriosis world, is reaching out to each other for help and support.
Oh yeah, it's great. It's amazing. It really is.
Now, I watched a couple of your YouTube videos and your Instagram videos. I love the blooper reels. This is what I go through before you see me so professional on, and then it's one take after another. It's fantastic. It's, you know what? It just shows that you are real, you know, and it's not, you know, one take, you know, and boom, it's done. If there's one thing that I've learned from podcasting and YouTubing, it's the fact that we are literally all the same, and we all have the same downfalls and insecurities and things like that. And it's fantastic to laugh at each other. You know, it's not personal. It is just, it's a lot of fun.
It really is. I'm glad you appreciate those blooper reels, because I always wonder what people think about.
Oh no. When it came through, I went, wow, you edit better than I do. I'm going to have to start asking you for tips.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, I understand that the government is getting involved. Now, is it with research and treatments they're getting involved with, or explain that to me?
So what I know about what is currently taking place is, I don't like to talk too much about politics typically, but so the NDP is actually the group that, the political group that went forward and passed this, made the Endometriosis Awareness Month possible in Ontario.
Excellent. Good for them.
Yeah. And amazing. Like it's just so great to see that, that someone out there in the political world cares about endometriosis. And I felt like for the longest time that, you know, maybe it wasn't important enough, or, you know, that people just didn't care, because this is a disease that affects people who were born with a uterus. And,
yeah,
you know, and then so endo, you may or may not ask this question, but there's this awesome group that's called EndoAct Canada. And they have developed this toolkit that's available for people to have everything that they need to be able to contact their local MP and to provide information to their local MP about what endometriosis is and what could be done to help the endometriosis community.
Excellent.
And so what I know from conversations that I've had with different people in the endo community is that there are many, there's lots of research that is already taking place. And I know specifically that there's research that's happening in BC. Mm-hmm. And I should also say that EndoAct is also, it's made up of medical professionals as well as people who experience endometriosis as well.
Excellent.
So, yeah. And so, so in terms of what is being looked for or what is being seeked out by the government, I hope I'm wording this properly, but is that we're trying to reach out to our MPs to try and get the awareness out there and to describe what the need is. And we're hoping for a national action plan for endometriosis because this actually already exists in other countries. Like France has a national plan for endometriosis and so does Australia. And I'm probably missing.
How many women are affected by endometriosis?
There's at least 1 in 10, but I imagine the number, so at least 10% of women and people assigned female at birth are affected by endometriosis, but I imagine it's probably much greater than that.
Okay, and that that website again is endoact.ca, so it's endoact.ca.
Correct. That's
excellent. Well, then maybe we can get the ball rolling with some other people who have just learned about endometriosis and see what we can do. It doesn't matter what political party that started it. Nope. It's just that, again, maybe there's just people like myself who don't know what it is and are willing to learn about it. As we're coming to a close here, is there anything you would like to leave our audience with? Any advice or helpful tips or even what questions to ask their doctor, like how to be their own advocate or anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the number one piece of advice that I always like to get out there is that to be your own biggest advocate.
Right.
There's going to be a lot of roadblocks along your journey, and you're not alone in this. Painful periods are not normal, no matter how many times that you may or may not have a doctor tell you this.
Right.
Chronic pelvic pain is not normal. And if you're experiencing symptoms of endometriosis or of adenomyosis or any other chronic illness for that matter, you know, just keep pushing until you get answers, because we can be our own biggest advocates because we are the ones that know our body is telling us that there's something wrong.
Right.
And, just because a doctor says, no, your symptoms aren't valid, doesn't mean that they are. Mm-hmm. And in order to be your best and biggest advocate is just to not take no for an answer. So if one door closes, the doctor says, I can't help you, there's nothing wrong with you, then just find a new doctor.
Right.
And there's lots of resources out there. One of my favorite resources for here in Ontario, specifically in the GTA, is the Women's College Hospital website. There's lots of resources on there, and they can actually help you. The resources can help you find a new doctor.
Excellent.
And there's also Endometriosis Network Canada also has a lot of information about endometriosis specialists specifically as well.
Great. Now, I'm so glad that you're down in the city of Toronto and that there are, you know, like Women's College where there's a lot of women that are able to, deal with other women's issues, doctors and things like that. It's so great that you've got connected with these people that aren't, you know, just blowing your symptoms off or anything like that. I'm so glad that you're getting the help that you need, and you know, that you are also helping others in need.
Thank you. I'm so glad. You know what? I'm very grateful that, as you said, to be in the grid in Toronto and in the GTA, it is such a blessing, especially being here in Ontario, because mm-hmm. I'm so close to Hospital Row, which is University Avenue, where some of the most major hospitals in Ontario are, and which is definitely one of the reasons why I decided to come to Toronto. I knew that there is more possibilities in terms of, you know, hopefully getting connected with people in healthcare here.
Excellent. That's great. Well, Ashley, thank you very much for being on the show today. This has been eye-opening on so many levels.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
You know,
it's the perfect time.
Yeah, March is Endometriosis Month. Yeah, that's really difficult to say sometimes.
It sure is.
I appreciate the fact that you have stepped up to the plate to share your story and to tell others about your story and to help others with your story and their stories. We need more people like that. And I appreciate the fact that your doctor listened, that your doctor was thinking outside of the box, and that they're taking good care of you, because you're pretty special to us.
I appreciate it too, and we won't tell anyone else, but you guys are my favorite cousins. You
heard it right there. You heard it right there. All right. Thank you, Ashley, for being on the show today. And this is John White saying thank you very much for coming along on our journey on the John White program. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you.